This workshop is for the council to gain information to use in our regular workshop, our regular shops that are coming up, so. Before we start, though, is there any citizens that'd like to address the council about any issues before we get started? I'll allow you 5 minutes to do that. No? Okay. Then, cargo containers. Daryl, you want to address us on that one?
I would. Thank you, members of the council. Good evening. Daryl Piercy, staff planner for the record. The issue before you that we'd like to discuss this evening is dealing with cargo containers. What we're finding is that there are a number of cargo containers that exist throughout the city, primarily in the commercial 2 zone and industrial zones. We've recently have gone through a code enforcement operation where a single property owner was asked to remove his cargo container because he had failed to get a conditional use permit, and he elected to do so rather than go through the process and obtain the conditional use permit. But what that led to was a number of complaints specific to other containers that are located within the city. We now know that there's at least a dozen cargo containers in the C2 zone and industrial zone that by code it appears should have a conditional use permit in order to be legally placed. Once a conditional use permit is obtained, the code allows for the cargo container to remain for 2 years. Now, it is clear that there have been cargo containers in the city much longer than 2 years and have gone on for many years without any enforcement action or any request from the city of these property owners to obtain a conditional use permit. So we're bringing the issue to council because we anticipate that we'll be receiving a number of applications for conditional use permits. Conditional use permits are required to go before the hearing examiner, so it will not be something that is either heard by the Planning Commission or the council, unless it's appeal. So therefore, there is a policy issue here because it appears as though these property owners either have felt that they were in compliance with the code, or in fact, in some instances, perhaps were told that they were in compliance with the code by city staff. And historically now, these have been going on for years and years. And to bring this forward and say, you know, on this date, you must come into compliance by this interpretation of the code, we feel is something that the council needs to be aware of. Now, what complicates the matter just a bit further is that the code has a little bit of ambiguity contained within it. I'd like to direct you to chapter 8.62, which I've handed out to the council. And it seems to be pretty clear. It talks about cargo containers. It talks about the requirements for cargo containers. It has some pretty clear siting requirements for them. And it does talk about the fact that they need to go through a conditional use permit process. The difficulty comes when we get to the zoning ordinance, chapter 17 of the city code. And within chapter 17, again, it talks about as a permitted use, providing you obtain a conditional use permit. But then it goes through to talk about a permitted use if it meets these criteria. And one could interpret that broadly to mean that, well, it's conditional use, but if you meet this criteria, it's permitted. And that's a little bit inconsistent with the clear conditional use requirement under Chapter 8. To get even, I think, even a little more complicated, under industrial uses, which I didn't hand out to you, but under industrial uses in the code, cargo containers are any use that's permitted in the commercial 2 zone is a permitted use in the industrial zone. So, and let me rephrase that. Any allowed use in the commercial zone is a permitted use in the industrial zone. So if it's allowed in commercial, it's permitted in industrial. Cargo containers are allowed by a conditional use permit in commercial, so therefore they're a permitted use in the industrial zone. It's unclear. I mean, the code just dances around it a little bit and whether or not you need to go through the process. So knowing that there's a whole host of these coming forward, perhaps up to a dozen, maybe more, that will go through a considerable expense to go through a hearing examiner process, we felt it was really appropriate to bring it to council and say, you know, there's a policy call here. How do you wish us to interpret the zoning code? Do you want to take this opportunity, since cargo containers have been in place over the years with no apparent difficulties and certainly not many complaints, to do these through some sort of administrative review? Should they be permitted outright? Should there be criteria for placement? All of those questions right now, I think, are on the table in terms of how we should approach cargo containers. Is it something that the city wants to address at all, or should we just prohibit cargo containers for storage in any zone? It's really, I think, a question that is time to bring before the council and get your thoughts and opinions and direction for staff. Any questions?
So right now, they're not allowable in residential?
They're not allowed in residential at all. The code is very clear that in residential neighborhoods, or any zoning that's residential, they're not allowed. And so we're really only talking about the commercial 2 zone and the industrial zone, where there appears to be at least some misunderstanding or misinterpretation of the code over the years of how cargo containers were placed.
I wasn't clear if you thought there was ambiguity in the codes regarding the 24-month use. Is one can be interpreted that can be permitted? Is that what you said? Or do you think both specify the 24-month period?
The 24-month period is addressed in both the Commercial 2 zone and the overall code, Chapter 8, regarding cargo containers. What the code doesn't say is that that's a 2-year limit. It says that it's for a 2-year period, and it gives the impression that you can renew that conditional use permit by going back to the hearing examiner and asking for an additional 2 years, and doing that every cycle, so that at some point the hearing examiner could say, no, 10 years is enough. But it's a 2-year period that the conditional use is good for, but it doesn't say that is the only period that you can allow. In other words, it doesn't say it's non-renewable. And any conditional use permit that has a time limitation almost always is allowed to be renewed based on review at that time. So if someone had a cargo container for 2 years, the code continued to allow cargo containers, and they came back and asked to have their conditional use permit renewed, it would be very difficult to deny that if they followed the process in the code for a conditional use permit.
Can you give us a summary, at least me, a conditional use permit? What's the process? What's the cost? And an example of something else that would go through that?
Well, the process is that it's heard by the hearing examiner.
So which is a neutral third party?
Neutral third party.
Attorney out of Moses Lake we have a contract with.
Okay.
It's a party that the city contracts with.
So it's expensive then?
Yeah, it conducts a public hearing. There's testimony that's provided. It's the most formal quasi-judicial process that we have. It is expensive, relatively speaking. I think our application fee is $500, but I think they're also responsible for reimbursement of any costs associated with the review. So ultimately, it could be fairly expensive for the applicant to go through a conditional use permit process. And I'll give you an example. If it was a controversial location and the hearing examiner left the hearing open for written testimony and conducted a second hearing, and then it was appealed, all of that would add to the cost to where it would not take long before you could be up to several thousand dollars for the process. And it's a very time-consuming process. There's a notice requirement for the public hearing. There's a statutory period of time that takes place. And so it can take anywhere from 60 to 90 days to go through that process. In the meantime, the applicant has no response, no answer to his request. So it is not, it's not our most user-friendly process. It usually is reserved for highly controversial, difficult issues that are something that you want to have a very precise, well-thought-out, justifiable decision for. But it is usually reserved for those issues that are unique and don't have a set answer, frankly.
Darrell?
Yes.
A couple questions here. When we talk about permit to use these, I mean, there's a lot of difference. You take a construction site, we use them all the time, and they're just a temporary container that we use to hold materials and whatnot. And then there's the others that use them permanently. So do we have to make up 2 separate rules for these people, or would it work as far as the same use permit?
Actually, in our code, there's already an exception for the construction site. If you have a permit issued and you're under construction and the permit's valid, you can have a locked storage container on your site. It meets some setback requirements and other things, but it's already allowed and it's exempt from the conditional use permit process. The containers that we're speaking to are ones that are taken off of their wheels, they're placed on the site, typically on a block foundation or in some ways stabilizing them. There's a requirement in the code that they're painted the color of the main building, and you know, there's certain setback requirements that they have to meet in certain locations on the site that they can be. They can't be in front of the building, for instance. So, you know, there are some regulations in terms of placing those, but we are speaking to the ones that are there on a semi-permanent basis.
Eamon, this issue came up a few years ago. Do you remember?
Yes.
And what do you remember it? I was trying to think because I know it's been.
You are correct. We did address it. It was primarily relative to a cargo container directly across the street from City Hall at the old Potter's building. And the direction at that time was that we didn't want them visible from the street. And that was a criteria we used to ask them to remove it, and they did. But the visibility was the issue.
I think the other thing in that issue was that was in a C1 district where they actually aren't allowed as a conditional use. In the C2 district, they are. And so I think there is a difference between the commercial zone C1 and the commercial zone C2 in terms of intensity of uses. And primarily Main Street and First Street are C1 zones where that use is not allowed. The other thing just I wanted to point out is that the most restrictive portion of our zone, Chapter 8.62, is actually the oldest portion of our code. And the code's been modified in the C2 zone and in subsequent zones regarding the cargo containers, where there seems to be more ambiguity in the language. If we wound up before a judge, they would look at the newest of the codes in terms of intent rather than the oldest in terms of date of construction of the codes themselves. So it is something to keep in mind that where there's ambiguity in the code, the courts will look at the most recent code adoption to seek intent rather than the oldest.
Daryl, you've kind of got familiar with the standards of Othello and familiar with what other communities are doing. What would be your recommendation at this point?
Well, I'm going to give you my personal feeling now as a planner and the direction that I think the city is trying to head. But my personal feeling is that you can build a structure for storage on a commercial site that's far more attractive and far more in tune with the character of the community for not much more cost than these cargo containers. And frankly, I see the cargo containers as something that can easily get out of hand, that even though you have standards, the standards are hard to enforce. I think we're seeing that now. We have standards in place for over 15 years, and yet they're not being enforced properly. So my preference as a planner, and in terms of how the community looks and feels, would be to have a stick-built structure used as storage rather than portable cargo containers. And I think what you'll find is most communities are actually prohibiting cargo containers within their commercial areas, at least. Perhaps in industrial areas there's a place for them, but within your commercial zones and certainly your residential zones, as our code prohibits, cargo containers are generally being restricted from use inside municipalities.
I would agree with you on that. I'm not real hip on containers, although I have to admit, in cruising around town, I do not see a container that's in town now that bothers me, that I think is offensive. I was thinking about that before the meeting, and I hate to use the word grandfather things in, but might be applicable in this situation.
Is most of our problem in the C2 zone, or is it in the industrial zone?
I think most of our problems in the C2 zone, where we have those containers that have been placed without going through the conditional use permit process. I think you can read the code and make a very viable argument to say that within the industrial zone under our current code, you do not need to go through a conditional use permit process, because within the industrial zone, any use that's allowed in the commercial two zone is permitted in the industrial zone, and that means no conditional use permit. So it's not just an allowable use, it's a permitted use. And so in the industrial zone, I think you can make a reasonable case that a CUP is not necessary. But in the C2 zone, I think it's clear that it is under our current code.
Do we have a list of where these are?
We're working on compiling that. We have, our code enforcement officer has a complaint list now of a number of them that have been sent letters. We know that there's more. I think we've sent out 8 letters, Chief, somewhere in that neighborhood, and we know that there's at least 4 more. So we're expecting a dozen or more potential applications coming through as a conditional use.
And in theory, the conditional use, they just get permission to have them on their property for 2 more years if they went through the process?
It's my belief that once they have obtained a conditional use permit, the conditional use permit's good for 2 years. But once they meet that criteria, there's no exclusion in our code that says they must be removed after 2 years. It simply infers that you need to renew your conditional use permit. And of course, if it did prohibit the container that you had to remove it, then all they'd have to do is wait 30 days and come back and reapply. So I think the real issue is, do you want them in the C2 zone or in the industrial zone? And if you do, what do you do with, or if you don't, what do you do with the existing ones? Do you give a 2-year grace period or some way allow them to phase themselves out over X number of days or months or years? Mm-hmm. And put people on notice that on this date they will no longer be allowed and they must be removed by them. And that would be one option for you. The other option, as I outlined in my staff report, was that you could just simply keep the code as it is, take everyone through the conditional use permit, even though they may have been told that their use was allowed. And another option might be to go through each one of them administratively and make a determination on a case-by-case basis whether or not they're appropriately cited and they meet the criteria that it does exist in our code, and then revise the ordinance to put a 2-year limit on those so they can't be renewed. There's some options for you. The question is, which direction would you like to go?
I guess myself, I'd like to see it's not allowed in commercial zones, like you had mentioned. Have a big problem with industrial zones. It seems to me they'd fit down that area better. And do the idea of the 2-year, give people 2 years that are in those areas to get them moved. That's my personal feeling.
I guess I'd like to, see the list and go take a look at them and to help make a decision for myself.
Good idea to see where they are and what they look like. I don't know. If everybody has to go get a permit, and it gets very expensive, it's one way to stop it, I guess.
So right now you're talking commercial. It could be sitting behind the old power store then. Is that what you're saying?
Actually, no. That's a C1 zone.
Oh, okay. Where's the commercial then?
There's a C2 zone over on Broadway. And I'm trying to think where the other C2 zones are, but they're usually, the C1 zones are Main Street and First Street, and then Broadway is a C2 zone. I think there's some C2 zoning just behind First Street on the north side, but it's a limited area, and the main drag, the main commercial core of First and Main, these are not allowed.
I'm guessing that most of these that we have in town right now are south of the overpass in that industrial section.
About 2/3, I think, are. There are some on the main area of Broadway.
That whole area is what you classify as industrial then, correct?
That's C2 zone. Industrial is farther to the west.
On the other side of the highway?
Yeah.
For Evergreen Implement and all the others are over there.
Right. Actually, I think Evergreen Implement is C2.
Oh,
but on the west side is industrial.
West side, okay. Any more thoughts?
That's it. I would like to know a little bit more about where they're placed, but I do have a problem, and we went through administratively with each one, seeing if they met the criteria, because if you agreed to that one, the other one that they told to move is going to cry foul, but then we're going to have a worse problem. So we need to set up the standard and hold to it.
So we'll provide council with a list of locations? Is that what we're hearing?
That's what it sounds like, yeah. Get a list of where they're at and stuff. And
yeah. And we'll couple that with a map of C1 and C2 so you can compare the list with the zoning map.
And maybe a comment from Whitaker about how he feels about grandfathering, if that's a bad precedent to set or...
Well, there is no such legal term as grandfathering. Everybody kicks it around. That's why we have conditional uses. If there is a non-conforming use in a zone, the conditional use process is to move it into compliance over a number, a set time period. And each issue is different. So there really is no grandfathering. If something is out of compliance in a zone, it's non-conforming, and we have to work with the individual to bring it into compliance over a period of time, over a reasonable period of time. That's what the courts have said. For example, the Modern Trailer Court, we've been working with them for 5 years now, and each year we have a different level that they must obtain, and we will bring them into compliance over a number of years.
Can you make it a non-conditional process and just say in industrial or C2, you can have it for 2 years and then it's got to be gone?
Yes. I mean, sure. You can write the code however you choose regarding the regulation of things. The issue is just how do you want to write the code? Because right now the code is somewhat unclear other than they're definitely allowed in the industrial zone, and they're definitely not allowed in residential or C1 zones. The real issue is the C2 zone and how to handle them in that area. And I even think the code is defensible in terms of requiring a conditional use permit now in the C1 zone. The problem is that's not the way it's been applied. And these cargo containers have sprouted up over the years, and there has not been consistent either code enforcement or application of the code in terms of interpretation by city staff.
Any other questions from council? Thank you, Darrell.
Thank you.
Order number two, second quarter report from Adams County Fire District 5, Chief Ebaka.
Good evening. Why did you do that? The quarter has been relatively quiet. 30 fire calls. Well, we're up to about 35 now today after the weekend. Which Othello had no fire-related fires, which is uncommon. And our inspections are up to almost 60 now from when I filed the report with Debbie. Trains are 6, and plus the Wawa flashover trailer, which is a great train. We hope to offer that again in a couple of years for our firefighters. They've added to it, and it gives you more of a realistic, and it also trains them if things were to go to a bad scenario, how to get out of the building, an escape tactic. So it's a well worth training. I put on the report that 8121 was inspected. That should be 8120. That would be the oldest ladder for the city. That was inspected on a 5-year annual inspection and passed. It had two minor repairs that need to happen, and we can do those, I hope, in-house. We'll be working on that later this year. So If you have any questions for me?
City fire incidents, what is the most common?
False alarm.
False alarms, yes. By business or?
Yes, by our industry, which they continue to work on their problems, and we're working to resolve some issues.
And in homes, what is the most common that you guys deal with?
Not a lot this year. We haven't had a lot of calls for home fires.
Okay.
Residential at all this year. Mm-hmm. We've had some motor vehicle accidents in the city that we've responded to. Some smoke scares, which I don't consider a residential fire. You know, a dirty detector goes off, and in the new homes now, one detector goes off and they all go through the house. They all go off. So we respond to those periodically, and we're able to assist the owner in determining what the problem is.
You said dirty detector, so they should be cleaned once a year or something, or how do you know it's dirty, I guess, since I got a bunch in my house?
Dirty, if the eye was to get dusty in them, it would create a false reading of smoke. Oh, okay. So you can blow them out periodically. Smoke alarms should be replaced every 10 years, they found out now. Batteries should be tested replaced every 6 months. But the biggest thing is to replace them every 10 years now. They found that after 10 years, they're failing. They may test good, but they might not be able to sense the smoke.
Seeing Gary here reminds me at 4:30 this morning, there's a pretty serious accident at 1st and 26 again. So the state's assessment that we need to do something at that intersection appears to be correct.
Any other questions for Chief?
Chemical release simulation at the pool exercise with the fire department?
Very possible. Well, Jay and I talked about that last week a little bit, and we can work to just set something up. So, all right. Yeah. Thank you, Chief.
Just FYI, relative to fire, the new building codes are going to require residential units to be fire sprinkled beginning next year.
What?
Yep.
Serious.
Really? Ouch. Expensive.
So you're going to build something to it this year.
It's like if you build a detached garage, that wouldn't be something that's been sprinkled, right?
I'm sorry?
A detached garage wouldn't have to be sprinkled? Only if it's attached.
It just says resident. What I read was a draft, and it just says residential. Didn't say garage or not attached, or I didn't read that part.
Wow.
Or didn't indicate that part.
Okay. Number three, Department of Transportation, Paul Meyer, letter of understanding. Jay?
As we've been discussing in the past with Paul Meyer being here, what you have attached with your agenda memo is a letter of understanding that the State Department of Transportation wants to enter in with us. And what this letter of understanding does is defines which agency is responsible for which actions. Basically, what it's telling you is that the state is administering the project, designing the project, overseeing the project, conducting all change order correspondence with the city and council, with the city's approval. And basically what it comes down to is the city is going to be responsible for the pass-through of the federal monies to pay the contractors. This letter basically just lines out exactly who is doing what throughout this two-stage project.
The city attorney has reviewed this letter, and as normal, if you work with DOT, you sign their contract, they don't change it.
Just a comment, do we get anything out of this other than the idea of the project? I mean, they always charge us 10% or 15%. We should get a little cut back to them.
No. They've actually done all the work. So
we'd like to put on the consent agenda.
Yeah. Yes, we would like, with your approval, we would like to put this on the consent agenda for the next council meeting to be signed and sent back to the Department of Transportation.
Okay with everybody?
Sounds good here. Just watch the change order.
They do have to come before the city for approval, just as any other change order. Thank you.
Any other questions?
So in essence, will just be a pass-through for the funds? Is that the bottom line?
Yes.
The state will provide all project, all progress estimates for us to okay and sign for the federal monies to go back to them.
Okay.
Thank you, Dick.
Yep.
Number four, fiber optics agreement discussion. Stan.
Good evening. Be easy on me. It's my first time. What is before you is the an extension, I guess we could call it, of the agreement we currently have with Saddle Mountain Wireless. We currently have an agreement with them where they have the opportunity of having antennas on their water towers and our building here for the providing of their internet service. And in exchange for that, we've received wireless internet at each of our facilities, wastewater treatment, public works, this building, and the pool. By the what is proposed here is that we are going to be bringing fiber optics into this building. They have agreed to pay 50% of the cost of the construction of the fiber coming into this building. In exchange, we would provide them with rack space to put their equipment. We will get a much more reliable and higher capacity internet for the city as part of the trade-off for this. And then they would be broadcasting from here up to the mountain to spread out to, you know, to their various clients. It's basically an extension of their current agreement. We've had a very good working relationship with them to this point. And the benefits that we also have is in bringing the fiber in here, we will also be connecting from City Hall building to the Public Works building, which will cost us an additional $3,200 beyond the $2,900 that would be our half of bringing into the building from 7th. That will increase the capability of Public Works. They're kind of isolated down there. They're not a part of our network. They can't access any of our accounting information directly. File sharing is almost non-existent. We do have email back and forth. We would eliminate the T1 line that we're currently paying for between here and Public Works. And I just received word today from the Noel Communications, who will be doing the, which will be providing the fiber into to us, and also from Adams County, that they have completed their negotiations, and the Department of Information Services of the state has agreed to a contract which will tie Ritzville to the building across the street, Adams County, what do they call that?
Services building.
Public Services Building, and to the Sheriff's Department. That's as I was told today, that has been completed. So the benefit then by bringing fiber into this building expands tremendously, because that will eliminate the T1 we have to Ritzville. And we will tie into the Public Services Building for our police department, for our Spillman, for the scan lines and such. So it should be a cost savings to us. In any event, it shouldn't be costing us more, and we will be going at the speed of light. That's fiber. That's an IT joke. Yeah. It will be a great benefit for reliability as well as the speed. Are there any questions?
So is this going to involve us purchasing a bunch of new equipment?
The amount of the equipment that we have will not be extremely costly. As in my research, I believe we can tie, it won't cost us anything as far as the internet coming in. Where we will have equipment will be in the City Hall building and the Public Works building, and I believe that I can have that in the neighborhood of $1,000 combined. It isn't like it used to be. Original fiber optics, you're looking at $50,000, you know, to light it up. But with the distances we're looking, we should be able to do it for a neighborhood of $1,000.
This T1 line you talk about and cost, I assume we pay money, like a phone bill on that?
That is correct.
And with fiber optics lines, there is no such payment?
Well, there is. There is a cost. It will cost $300 per month, as I believe what they're currently quoting. And I'm sorry, I don't have the exact numbers of what we're paying currently for the T1. The reliability and speed and the ability to tie their server into our server is the greatest of the benefits.
Now, it was a pretty big deal that fiber optics was coming to Othello as like the clinic or anybody else hooked up to that?
It's my understanding that the clinic and the hospital have had the dark fiber put in, and I did not get the opportunity because I was working on some other issues to get the answer of whether or not they have that they are lit up and actually functioning yet.
CBHA and the county are on, and we heard a month or so ago that they were lit up. Okay. The county brought fiber to Othello at a cost of $125,000. So they bore all that cost to get fiber here. And then each entity pays for it to basically go from county services building to their location, like the clinic, the hospital, and CBHA. They're all online as far as I know. Or on fiber, I guess you say.
Yeah.
But fiber is a hard connection?
It is a hard connection, yes. They're little glass fibers about the thickness of a hair. And they're in a shield, and they run in pairs, one incoming, one outgoing. And a fiber pair is what we would have. They encase those in structural sheathing to be able to withstand the structure. And I don't know how many pair they will actually bring into this building. I would imagine it's probably like a 25 pair, of which we will have two pair basically will be activated. One that will connect the police department to, well, I guess possibly three pair. One that will connect Public Works and the City Hall, one for the police department to the Public Services Building, and then the one that will be totally paid for by Saddle Mountain that would bring the internet service in.
CBHA has 10 pairs. That's what they requested.
I'm just not clear on it. I have Saddle Mountain where we work, and it all comes in on a, there's no hard wire. It hits a dish and comes into the computer. Right. Is there a hard wire in here for Saddle Mountain that goes to their antenna, or?
From our server room, yes. There's a router up there that goes up, a wire up to the antenna.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Another benefit, we don't have the current technology, we're not utilizing the technology, but we also would have the capability with the additional bandwidth and speed of the fiber optics to do video conferencing, for example. If you wanted to have a conference with Olympia or with some other location, it would not be that costly to set up in the council chambers, for example.
Well, that's one of my goals I'd like to see eventually happen, because there's a lot of meetings that we go to between here and Ritzville. It would be really nice to set up a video conferencing and save a lot of time on the road and a lot of people that are traveling out before.
You bet.
The question that I got is, Saddle Mountain is agreeing to do this half of the cost. What happens if Saddle Mountain fails to be a business anymore, or they cut ties with the city or anything else?
Well, should they cease to do that, then we would be like any other business. We have, we are not paying a financial cost for our internet at the present time. If they were to cease providing, we would have to look for another provider.
Or in this case, another provider. Would we be losing any equipment that they would be pulling out that we would be using at the time that they set up?
Anything that they would put in would not be a substantial enough cost, and I don't think that it's significant enough. I don't foresee them pulling out. And if they ceased to provide service, in many instances they just leave the equipment behind.
Can you talk a little bit about hot zones and what we're looking at?
Oh, the hot
public
spots.
Areas?
Right. It was discussed informally about having the city hall block being a hot spot. so people could sit out of the parking lot with their laptops or their PDAs and whatever and have internet access. If you happen to have a device, you probably plug it in now and you'll find that that's working. I haven't checked to see how thoroughly, you know, it hits the whole block, but we can increase that as needed. And I mentioned today in a just an informal meeting with Eamon that we could provide that service at very minimal cost to our city parks, Kiwanis Park and Lions Park. We could provide so people could sit there with their laptops and might just be another service to the public that we could provide.
That was about $50 a park?
The basic equipment, I could put one access point in, is about $50 is our cost. There is a little bit of time, there'll be a little bit of cabling, but it's fairly minimal in the hardware cost. Lions Park is large enough, we might need to put more than one there. We certainly could cover the pool area out so far. And if we wanted to cover the rest, we could do that. I guess there's no reason to have it at the ball field necessarily. And that's something that you know, just let you know what we've been thinking. And are there any more questions?
Okay. I guess, Stan, before you sit down, since this is your first time up before us, the citizens in particular, I think all the council members know what your job is.
Okay.
Why don't you explain to us
what my job is?
What do you do for the city?
I sweep the floors.
What do you do for the city?
We don't have enough time.
I'm the informational technology manager by title. I take care of the electronics portion of the heating and ventilation and air conditioning system, as well as the phone systems, surveillance cameras, computers, the networking, and anything else that has electricity flowing through it that they think I can help them with.
Thank you, Stan.
Okay. Then I'd like to ask that we place this item on the consent agenda for your next meeting then.
Everybody?
Yeah, I would just ask that the initial cost appears low, but then you said $300 a month to lease it. How that compares to the, and maybe you can tell me intuitively how that compares to the T1 cost. Is that like double, half? What are we doing to ourselves?
Okay, we'll put a little spreadsheet together with you and delineate those two.
Okay.
That'll be clear to next meeting. Right.
I haven't seen the final cost as far as the police department's portion compared to the initial T1 line we have now. It's my understanding, but I haven't seen it in writing yet, that it's going to be less than what we're paying out. So we may pay a little bit more to Public Works. I don't know that to be the case, but overall, I think that it should be financially very, very viable.
Thank you, Stan.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Tim?
Yes. Yes?
This hotspot that you mentioned, is that password, no password required? Currently, there is no password required. I just have it set up for security so that our network is secure from any intrusion. I we may wish to have it like a normal hotspot where they actually have to log in and register for use for a set period of time. That's something that we will come with time.
Any other questions from the audience? Okay, let's go to number 5, Cooley Corridor Kiosk. Ken?
I don't know where I'm at with this, but one thing I got to apologize, I didn't get something up on the board here so the audience could see it, but I think I can explain it pretty well, what I've got in mind here. I've been working on this for probably 3 years or better, and people keep telling me, say, when is this going to happen? What's going to go on? So I thought I'd bring it to council tonight. Throw it up to council, let them think about it a little bit, throw it up to the audience, and see whether we got a good idea or not. What I'm working on, as far as I'm concerned, is going to be a community project. I think it's a little bigger than any one of us can put together. I've kind of took it to our Centennial Committee, and they've kind of said, well, that could be part of Centennial. And I'm already involved in the Cooley Corridor, so it's already part of the Cooley Corridor. I talked to Jay, he went up with me in the location, and we kind of surveyed the idea of what we've got in mind. And I give a copy to all the councilmen here. It's a real quick and fast drawing that I made up of it. Location is Main Street and what I'm calling 16th Avenue. That street has not actually been designated as a street, so I said that's 16th Avenue. So I'm going to call it that. It's West Mirstar, and it's at the head of our walking path. We've got an area out there. It's not too big, but it needs some help. All we've got right now at the present time is a weed patch, and did get the city to do a little spraying on it, but it still looks like heck. And if we've got a nice walking path for the area, we need something else to go with it. So kind of my proposal tonight is kind of a two-phase thing. I want to put in a mini park and get the city involved, the community involved, and whoever else I can beg, borrow, or steal, and put in kind of a small park area. There's kind of a triangle-shaped location there. I wished I had a overlook of it, but anyway, Main Street comes along, and this is the street. It's a long, narrow strip in there next to that walkway. And my total plan of the thing is to go in there and put some fill in it, and maybe later, yeah, or maybe we can do it at the same time. It depends on how much help we get from the community, is to level it, roll it into Mirstar, into their curb area, and then plant it to grass and have it sprinkled in the whole bit. My plan of attack for the kiosk part of it, which is the Cooley Corridors part, I want to come right off of the east side of the walking path and put in a about 20 by 20 slab in there. It's got a little notch in it. And like I say, I kind of apologize because I didn't get these up on the board for you. But anyway, what I've got is a 20, actually this is a 12 by 20 slab here. And it's got our kiosk, which has got the Othello community on one side and the Cooley Corridor on the other side. And I've kind of put some ideas in here what we could put as far as our side of it's concerned. But anyway, we've got two columns that sets here, and then we've got a 4x8 board that sets in the center of it. And we're going to put a couple lights out on the outside edge of it. We may have access to some antique looking lights, and we thought that would help fit with the centennial part of it. So that's what we're going to do on the outside edges of it. I kind of drew a quick and fast view of that, which would be the board, and then the two lights would be outside of it. Then there'll be two benches between the kiosk part and the walking path. They can use it as a walking path, or they can use it to sit there and rest or have a picnic or whatever. But it's kind of a two-fold deal. I mean, it needs to be done by the community, and I think we've got a lot of support from a lot of the area that we could probably actually get in there and get that portion of it done. Cooley Corridor's got a little money for the kiosk part of it. I'm not going to say how much, but we do have a little. This is my concept of it. That's what the kiosk itself looked like. This is one we already put in. It's sitting somewhere, someplace. Not really, but this is a computer-generated idea of what we've got, and that's what we're going to have out here, basically. You can do anything on computers, you know. You can build anything overnight, make it work, but that's what we've got in mind for it. I got several different pictures of what we kind of had proposed for some of it. I've got some here with the map of the Cooley Corridor, and more or less, you are here, which is Othello, and then it shows different things. We've got Sand Hill Cranes here for one thing, a little part of map of Othello and our refuge area. This is, I mean, this is just ideas. It doesn't have to happen this way, but this is my thought. I've got one here of the heart of the Columbia Basin. Of course, it's got potatoes and farming. The other one is a wildlife refuge. Something like that would probably go on the Othello side of it. That's kind of my thought of what we've got in mind here. Well, that's kind of basically quick and fast what I've got been working on. I think between the community and between Cooley Corridor and the Centennial Committee, City of Othello Beautification Committee, and several others around town, I think we put this thing together. And I'd like to get it done possibly this year, at least a good portion of it, and then maybe finish up the rest of it in the early spring. That's kind of my thought. And I just kind of want a thought from the council here, if you want me to pursue it, and the whole community involved in this thing. I think it's a worthwhile project, and I think it's time to do something to make things look good around here.
Who owns the land?
Well, we know who owns it, and hopefully we can get that without too much problem there. Yeah, I don't know whether we'll have to buy it. I don't know that yet, and I've got hopes that maybe they'll grant it to us for a park area. They've already granted us the walkway area and whatnot for that path. So, and it's a spot that's dead anyway. I mean, you couldn't build anything on it anyhow. So hopefully we can make it work. Can we have a...
Yeah, go ahead.
Are there going to be some basalt pillars? Do we have anything for the basalt pillars that we might have a name on for Cooley Corridor? I don't know about. Will we be planning on using them there?
No. I'll have the other for this one here. I've got access to take care of these two.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to include some parking in this setup, aren't you?
Well, what we got right at present time, that street is unimproved. So kind of our thought, we're going to wrap that curb around and back to the path area and then put some parking in there. It'll probably just be gravel parking for now until somebody develops that park or that street. What else can you do? I mean, you've got a walk path out there and you've got no place to park. I mean, we should have looked at it a little more when we built it, right? As far as I'm concerned. We just went and built a walk path. How do you get there? Where do you park? Out in the middle of Main Street and just go up there and park? I mean, this is the whole thing. I mean, you got to complete a project, and this is going to help do that portion of it. And then as they develop that street, we may have to change the parking, but this will at least get it started.
Any other questions from council? Anybody in the audience have a question on this issue? Okay, thank you, Ken. Committee reports. Any council member have committee reports?
We have a ACDC meeting this Thursday. It's going to be in Lynn. We're trying to rotate communities now with the ADC. Last time it was in Washington. Very good, very well attended. We got to go and visit a couple businesses, and we went out and looked at the side of their test plot for the Great Point. It's very interesting, very nice to see. We'll probably carpool once we get about 5, if any council members interested in going. Also, I had a chance to, the Barracudas had their first swim meet here last week. And it was very nice, very, very well attended. I guess the one that they had last week is the only one on the schedule. They were not able to get in to the scheduling with the new league that they are trying to join in Yakima. So, but they, We're very, very happy with how it was handled and how it went on Thursday night. And a lot of good comments on the fence increasing, the park shelters, a lot of really good comments.
The loudspeaker system?
It was very, very handy because they're having the hand mics, the radios for the PA system. It worked out very well for them.
Any other committee reports? Okay.
It's all yours.
Back to Cooley Corridor again. I just want to show you something. Here's American Road. And the Cooley Corridor is advertised in that. And part of your money from Othello, that's where it went, was to this. We even got honorable mention. We're down in the fine, fine print in there, but at least it says Othello on it. It does say the ex-county north of us here. I'm not going to mention its name, but it's in there too, and Electric City. But at least they did mention our name for that, for partial payment of this advertisement in the national magazine. And the only other thing I got is on our centennial committee, we're still meeting every month as usual, and I think we're pretty well on track. We've got some new ideas. I'm not going to show them off tonight, but we've got some new projects that we're thinking about and working on, and our calendar's coming along quite well. I think that we should have a proof reading of that thing hopefully next meeting. And our banners, we're working on those. We're going to put up a couple signs advertising the centennial. We're going to have those made up here shortly and installed. Anything else, Debbie, that you can think of? Anyway, I think we're on track pretty well where we're at and where we want to be. We're trying to shoot at the fair time is basically when things are supposed to be put together with our artist poster and things like that should be for sale. And that's kind of our sights anyway as far as dates and whatnot is concerned.
Anybody else on unfinished business? Or committee reports, I guess. Unfinished business.
Before you trade, one of the things that came up was a possibility of having a wind up some grain, have a thrashing thing, you know, like for the 100th year. I got a line on a thrashing machine, the binder. The problem is, I guess we'd be getting it down here. Actually, I was talking to Schessler, and his dad has a thrashing machine that they probably used about 3 or 4 years ago, and a binder to cut the grain with so you could use it. It would be a matter of getting it down here and getting it set up and find somebody, you know, who would be willing to leave 2 or 3 acres of grain to bind that we could thrash at that time. And I'm still working on the guys to plow this about 3 or 4 acres up here by Walmart in the spring. But the thrashing thing would probably have to be trying to do it during fair time. So I was talking to Schessler and I said, you know anybody's got a thrasher? He said, yeah. He said, my dad's got one. It's in the shed, hasn't been used for about 3 years. So I'll have to talk to him and see if we can get something worked out. But I don't know whether how to get it down here. May have to haul it down here with a tractor that will run it, because you have to have a tractor that's got a belt pulley on it. Evidently he has one, but it's not very, they're not very fast. They go about 11, 12 miles an hour. That's just where I stand with that.
Put on the semi though. Get it down here a lot easier. Flatbed.
Maybe we get it all put on evergreen trailer or something.
We do have that direction. You never know. Okay, unfinished business. Anybody? New business?
pool committee Thursday, 4 o'clock.
Okay. Can you raise your hand a second?
Yeah, I would like to thank Jay and the staff for our kidney dialysis center down here, the opening of that, for taking the bleachers down and putting there for the attendance of the crowd. It needed to be a little water cooled on the top side there, but other than that, I think it was fine. And I appreciate that very much for getting them down there on time and picking them back up. And everybody on the dialysis center thought that was a great ceremony, and they were well satisfied with the turnout from the community and whatnot. So I want to personally thank you for that.
Yeah, I drove by the park on Monday up here after the Sun Fair thing, and it looked pretty clean and pretty well put together. It's been well cared for and cleaned up right away. I think they haven't gotten rid of the porta potties yet, but I didn't see lots of trash laying around. Things were picked up. Mm-hmm. Looked really nice.
Yeah, we got to really thank the guys that work under you, because if you would have seen the park Sunday morning, folks, I could not believe it. I never seen so much trash in my life. It was really sad. So whatever that machine is that you guys run across that grass sure cleans it up nice. Okay.
Team of matter discussion. Remind me if I'm incorrect. When we first started talking about this intersection down here at Reynolds and 26th, when the city got around finally and put the street in that matches the city, my understanding was we wanted to have a dedicated right-hand turn lane there. Okay, but I noticed that the light posts and the stop signs are right in the middle of where any kind of a dedicated right-hand turn lane would have to go.
If you line up the right-of-ways as they exist out there right now, those are out of the way, and your whole road basically moves over. We did do the four lanes through. We downed it to, I believe, three, right, forward, mm-hmm. left.
Thank you.
It sounds we requested it to be done. The only question remains are the blinking yellow caution lights that council and the mayor talked about, and I'm not sure if those are going to be funded or not. But just like the ones on 17 and Cunningham, that's yet to be seen.
There are yellow flashers at the intersection at the stop sign. What they're speaking about is the on the highway itself having right. flashing yellows as you approach.
So are they going to slow down traffic to 50 farther out now? You know? On 26, are they going to slow down the traffic farther out now towards
there's the... Never has there been a speed limit change involved in this intersection.
Okay. Any other new business?
For what it's worth, I thought I'd pass on to council and staff and the chief some input I continually get from my constituents. And one of their chief complaints that I keep hearing over and over again is noise from cars, both mufflers and stereos. So if you're looking for opportunities, apparently, according to my constituents, that's one there. And I see in the paper once in a while, like cities like Kennewick and that crack down on that kind of stuff. And I'm sure it's a universal problem everywhere, but it's that I just pass on that I'm hearing it from several different parties, and it seems to be a pretty common theme.
I got some flack over the post office thing up here too.
Yeah.
But then again,
who didn't?
I drove by there the other day, and the signs were up, you know, no you and I enter and all that kind of stuff. And here's the hospital park pickup is parked in there and come in this way. Where was I? I ran into Harry Geller and I jumped all over his case about it. That was the only car in there.
Yeah, there will be an article in this week's paper. The postmaster talked to the newspaper late last week, and they called me, and then they called the chief. And I think we've got everything squared away. The post office still has not completed what they told us they would do, the fencing and the striping. The temporary fence that's there for safety reasons, so nobody walks out into the parking lot at the post office, is ours, and we put it up there for safety only. And that will come down when they put their fence up. But they have yet to, they said they'd have it completed by the 29th. It's still not completed, and we're just waiting for them to finish what they said they would do. And then I think the flow will be better. The education process is ongoing. The chief had an officer over there all day, every day for 2 or 3 days. Jay put the fence up for the post office. So we've, I believe, gone over and beyond doing our duty to make the thing work, the transition work. The post office needs to finish what they told us they would do.
I got input that there's less parking now. Is that an actual statement? Factual statement?
I think overall it ended up 2 less, if I remember the count. It changed towards the end, but that probably is a true statement. Not in the parking lot. They lost 1, but it's probably
but the,
overall.
But the total true. Gain with the parking, didn't we gain with the parking on the street now?
Yes. But from what we identified in the early plan, we lost 1 from the street and 1 inside. But yeah, overall, it's a total gain from what there was in right. just the parking lot. Yes.
That's what I thought. Okay.
That's it. Okay. This workshop is adjourned then. Thank you everybody for coming.
Good job, Stan. Good job. Good job tonight, Mike. Dead on with those numbers.